Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello. Tim, you haven't said anything.
Hang on, are we actually going?
Oh, God. Yes.
Okay.
Aren't we?
Yeah, we don't normally hold the microphone.
No, I don't know why.
Hello.
I'm sure we have Oh, I'm really worried about your coffee because you've already spilled. Tim is at my office, right? And in my office, I have a not very comfortable but quite prized sofa. It came from Prague in, I think it was originally the 50s. I didn't come from Prague in the 50s.
This is built absolutely fascinating. The 50s. This is a bit on Antiques Roadshow where they go, I'm afraid, 35p.
Yeah. Anyway, he's already spilt some coffee on it. His foot is really near
the
coffee cup. And more importantly, for some reason, his production company have left us with the microphones not on a stand, just with wires everywhere. Liable to... Oh, if I were you, I'd drink that coffee, is what I'm saying.
Right, it's really winding you up, isn't it?
Well, you've already spilled something.
Yeah. On my leg as well, which is really uncomfortable.
Well, your leg is fine. We're at my office, ladies and gentlemen, in Kentish Town. It's a hot day, so I've had to open the window, otherwise we would get too hot. That's not me opening the window, that's the door shutting because a poltergeist did that. And you might hear some background sort of work noise as a result of that. Or you might, like I have a problem with flies in my room. If anyone got any ideas for flies, like how to sort out flies, I'd be interested. Because, I mean, I'm really not making my office sound great. I know. But anyway, so if you hear noise, if you hear us swatting.
It's a lovely office, but there are quite a lot of flies and noise, as you say.
Yeah. I mean, the noise is worse today than normal. Someone seems to be doing some work.
You said that there's an air conditioning unit that you could bring in. Makes a lot of noise, and you have to have the window open anyway, so it wouldn't. So we'd still have the noise.
Yes.
Is that air conditioning unit just a thing that makes a noise?
No.
That encourages you to open the windows? Because it might as well be.
Yeah. I mean, it's a bit shit. Anyway, welcome to Stalky Time to the... fuck. Welcome to Stalky Time for the Moon Boys.
Fantastic.
And what there is this week, or not week, because I don't do it every week, but this time of our lives, this moment in our lives, is quite a lot of interesting Bowie news.
Can I just check something with you?
Yeah.
Before I forget, because I've spilt coffee on my trousers.
Yeah. Are you okay?
And it reminds me. Let me ask you a question.
Reminds you of what? Weeing yourself?
Well, last Sunday...
Now we're cooking.
I was in Scotland.
Yeah.
Just to be clear, we're not cooking, in case people think we really are. Because that would be... The noise there would be horrendous.
I'm just going to say, you have a sort of bit of skin on the end of your nose.
Yeah, that's... my nose.
No, not the main bit of skin.
You seem to be covered in skin.
A bit of loose skin, and I can't focus while that's there.
Oh, I tell you what it is. I've got a little bit of a sort of infection or something on my nose.
Have you?
Nothing bad. Like a sort of.
You say that.
What do you call it? You know, slightly itchy thing on my nose that just needs a bit of cream. I was going to say eczema. It's like a
it's
skin
not a word
rash.
For an itch. Yeah. A rash.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Because as you know, I've sailed close to the wind in the last 10 days because I was worried about a mole on my leg.
Yeah. Wasn't it? Did she?
It's a wart.
It's a wart. That's right. Yeah. Because you texted me because I was worried to tell me that a good example of how terrible cancer is, which of course it is that you felt great joy at hearing the words "it's a wart."
Yeah,
yeah.
So just to recap the picture, we're in a hot room, noisy with loads of flies. I've got a wart and an infection on my nose,
And you've just spilt coffee on your trousers.
But it's not the 13th century, which is what it sounds like.
No, it's definitely
we're otherwise in good health. Yeah. So last Sunday,
but we're basically privileged. Let's not forget.
Yeah, no, definitely don't forget that. Last Sunday, I came back from Scotland, where I spent a weekend, on EasyJet.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to get them to sponsor us, like McDonald's did.
Yeah.
Particularly when I tell you this.
Yeah.
It was problematic.
Oh, okay.
Because there was storms.
Yeah.
And it took a while to come into Gatwick.
Yeah.
And so we were a bit late coming in. Then we got in, we landed, so sigh of relief. And then basically, for what turned out to be like 45 minutes, we sat there waiting for a slot because all the planes, there was nowhere to park.
Right.
So as we were about to start coming down,
yeah,
they said 5 minutes till, you know, whatever, the seatbelt's gone. I thought, I'm on a window seat. I do need a wee, but right, I can't be bothered.
Right.
And anyway, we're going to be down in a minute.
Yeah.
That isn't what happened. We got down 45 minutes.
You're stuck there.
And I'm stuck there. And of course, I don't know, you know how this works. I don't know it's 45 minutes until it is, because they're just saying we've no idea how long.
Right.
And I was thinking, what is my strategy here?
So the seatbelt sign had gone on.
Yep.
So you're not allowed to use the
toilet. You're not allowed to use the toilet.
Yeah.
Now, two things that are important to say. One is, a couple of old ladies at some point pressed the boom thing and asked to go to the toilet, and they were allowed to.
They were allowed to.
Yeah. So that made it a bit easier, thinking there is an escape.
You said a couple of old ladies, were they sitting together?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because that brings to mind the Genesis song.
Oh.
I forgot what it's called.
Is it Lamb Lies Down on Broadway?
No, it's not. Or Hinge and Bracket. Just the idea of two old ladies as a specific thing. Hang on, I need to know what the Genesis... Keep telling. I'm just going to check the Genesis.
Well, so the two old ladies got up. I've forgotten
Sunday
this.
Sunday at six when they close both the gate. That one. You know that one.
I don't really know what that is, but...
Okay.
it's a Genesis song.
Yeah. For Absent Friends, of course.
Okay.
A widowed pair still sitting there. A widowed pair. It's interesting.
Yeah.
I've just taken that to mean two old ladies. It could be two old men.
It could be two old men, yeah. It could be a man and a woman.
That seems very unlikely.
But what was interesting was that they put the call... The woman
said, hang on, the two old ladies got up together to go for the
toilet. I'll tell you. I'm now remembering exactly what happened. There was a bit of passive aggression from the air steward, because she said, you can go to the loo. I'll have to tell the flight deck that the plane is now... What did she say? Unflyable. She didn't say that. That's too emotive.
That would be unlikely.
But like, basically, we can't move... It's not safe to go forward.
Are you saying that she's got to tell the flight deck, which, by the way, does that mean the pilot?
Yes, the pilot.
I've got to tell the pilot to hover and not to move.
No, we're on the ground.
Oh, you're on the ground?
No, the point is...
Oh, you actually... Right, you're on the ground.
We're on the runway and we're being held and we can't go forward. You can see all the slots.
Right, so that you couldn't... Like, say a slot has appeared and old lady one is in the toilet.
Yeah.
You can't get that slot. You might have missed the window.
That's what she... Yeah. So she said... Oh, okay, you can go, but I need to tell the flight deck, the pilot, that the plane is not, whatever the phrase is, safe to go forward. And I think what she hoped was they'd say, oh, well, don't worry about that, dear.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to cause a fuss. And they obviously were desperate.
Yeah.
So they said, I didn't hear, but they said basically, okay. So she then had to go back to the front of the plane, phone the pilot.
Right.
And say...
That's embarrassing for the...
Yeah.
For but the widowed, they're old. For the widowed pair.
They're widowed pair. They're old and they've been through the war. And I think they sort of didn't care. They just need to go.
And they've been through worse.
But she basically... That all the body language from the air hostess was...
It's like, a real pain in the arse.
Yeah, and get on with it.
Yeah.
And what I found brilliantly comic timing was they said, no, we get it. And then they stood up and they were the slowest walker because they could barely...
Yeah.
I mean, they were really old and they took a long time to get there.
It's difficult to walk with a full bladder. Right. Particularly on a plane, particularly if you're widowed.
Widowed thing makes it much harder.
Yeah.
So they went to the loo, and I thought that makes it better and worse. Because I now know, there is a way of going to the loo, but I partly thought, am I going to be put in the same category as really old ladies by saying, excuse me, would you mind if I went to the loo?
Excuse me, I've actually watched this play out. I understand it's a problematic, you have to phone the flight deck.
Yeah.
You know, we may miss a window for a slot, but... I too need to go to the toilet like these old ladies.
Yeah.
All that's in there.
All that plus, worst of all, the notion that she might say, look, I'm really sorry.
Yeah.
Like, we'll do it for a couple of old ladies, but just hold on.
Yeah, but then you'll be pleased. Because a tiny part of you would think, she's looking at me, she's seeing a fit, a fit man in in the prime of life, whose bladder is clearly controllable, and I'm just going to tell this man, come on, mate, you're okay.
Yes, that's it.
Which sounds like she's telling you off, but she's complimenting you.
By the way, I would feel that you'd never get this, you couldn't negotiate your way through this, that I'll go to the loo, I know that the plane might have to taxi forward, sort of to go, but honestly, I'll be fine.
Well, that's what I was going
to
say.
I don't need to be in my seat.
That's what I was going to say, is like, what is it about being on the ground, or even coming into land, really, that makes it a problem.
So what makes it a problem?
Well, coming to land, all right. I can imagine that coming to land, you might have some kind of bump, which means that on the way to the toilet, you fall over and then you sue Ryanair. Is it Ryanair?
Yeah,
you
could sue Ryanair. That would be a bad case because you flew EasyJet.
Look, let's be honest. You're going to lose that case. Because if you said, against their instructions, against what they were saying, look, I just need to go to the toilet.
Yeah.
And then you bump your head because the plane...
Yeah.
Then that's your fault.
Yeah, I take your point. But I think they would be in trouble for not enforcing the safety.
Right.
I think. But either way, I think, you know, I've been on a, like you, I've been on a bus and you walk to your seat when the bus driver's driving.
Yeah.
It's basically that. Because once it's on the ground, it's effectively a bus.
Yeah, it's a bus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, I didn't do any of that. Instead, I comforted myself and we eventually moved on with this thought, which is, I think it would be possible to have a pee in your seat if you really, really needed to. And I think the way you do it, and that's why the coffee reminded me, I had half a bottle of water.
Right.
With me, and I think what you'd do is you'd use a coat or a jacket to cover yourself,
right?
Turn and, you know,
okay,
have a wee,
right?
And then use the bottle of water and pour it all over you, and then basically say, oh my god, I've just spilt this bottle of water, and your trousers are covered in
you
water.
Comforted yourself with that.
I just felt that was
utterly hideous. The whole thing sounds awful in every respect.
Definitely not something I want to do. And by the way, didn't do.
Also, what are you talking about? That's mad. Because
why?
Because you end up pouring piss on yourself anyway, so you may as well just piss your pants. What's the point of the whole getting the bottle out and putting a thing? Just piss your pants if you're going to piss your pants. If the whole thing.
So you can say it's water.
Okay, so I wouldn't be bothered about that anyway. I would think like I'll just butch it out. If I needed to piss my pants in any situation,
just do it.
I would just do it and then butch it out and assume, particularly, you know, I don't know, these trousers probably would show through. But then black jeans, I might get away with it. But if I needed, which actually probably wouldn't occur to me, but if I really needed to think, I don't want people to know I piss myself.
Yeah.
You piss yourself.
Yeah.
Then you say, oh my God, I've spilt my water. You don't go to the trouble of pissing, getting your cock out, which, by the way, is almost definitely going to get you arrested if the thing falls off, if the coat falls off, or if the old lady says, what are you doing? Put that away! I've just been to the toilet! Why don't you do that? Right, all those things that she's going to do while Genesis is playing. Or indeed, I had Eleanor Rigby originally in my head, but For Absent Friends is much better as a soundtrack. Right. Let me just play you a bit of it, right?
Okay.
As the soundtrack to this. Here we go.
So this is Imagine Me on EasyJet.
Yeah, this is your EasyJet.
Desperate.
Yeah. Well, the old... This is the old lady toddling off to the toilet.
Okay, yeah.
Weird. Ooh,
the sound of the night, yeah.
You thinking, oh, but I want to go for a piss.
Yeah. Does this make it easier or harder that she's going
there? But now I have to think about her on the toilet.
Yeah.
That's making me want to go to the toilet more. Thank you, Peter, anyway.
Wow. That's
how I imagine the widowed pair. So they're upset that you've got your cock out. It's hard. I would say pissing, especially if you're desperate, under a coat while you're sitting down into a bottle of water.
Yeah. So, no, not into a bottle of water, onto the floor or something, but you spill water everywhere.
Oh, it's horrible.
What else are you going to do? I mean, literally, what else are you going to do?
I honestly think, listeners, write in, send us messages. Is it not nicer for everyone for Tim to just pissed himself and dealt with that? Or pissed himself and then chucked water himself if he really was worried about being embarrassed. Then the whole pissing on the floor, getting his cock out, then doing the water.
I tell you what it underlines, it occurs to me as I talk about this, and I'm not alone in this by any means, what's really making this difficult, and I've ended up in this mess, is I'm embarrassed to say, I'd like to go to the loo. You know, it's a scene.
That's not embarrassing.
Well, no, but what I mean is, it's about causing a scene, isn't it? Sort of basically saying, in front of everyone... Hang on. A bit like some people in the theatre are really happy just to get up and say, sorry, I've got to go for to the loo.
Yeah.
5 minutes. It doesn't matter at any point. Whereas I'm always thinking, that would be so annoying. I just don't, you know. You're probably someone, I suspect you're quite at ease at saying, I just need to go.
Well, I did. Yesterday or the day before, I came back from Dublin. And that was a delayed flight and took a long... Well, delayed flight doesn't matter because there was a toilet in the airport.
Right.
But it took quite a long time and I was in an aisle seat, a window seat.
Oh, yeah.
And I'd basically was sitting there. I was about to go to the toilet.
Yeah.
I was I'd been thinking about it for a bit when people were coming on.
Yeah.
But you can't go when people are coming on.
Yeah.
This is quite similar in a way. You're not allowed to go when people are coming on.
You've kept this quiet. This is an almost identical experience. It's window seat.
It's not completely identical because... A, there was no widowed pair of old lady. There was, a boyfriend and girlfriend, Irish boyfriend and girlfriend of about 20, clearly thinking, I'm an old man. And they sat down. And here's the thing, is that because you're not allowed to go when the plane is loading, I basically had to wait until it was airborne and then immediately say, sorry.
I get that.
So that was quite bad. Yeah. Because there is a sense of we've just bloody sat down.
But... yeah. You can use the loos when you walk on.
Can you?
Yeah. As long as they're not fueling.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah, I've never known that.
You can use
a
people. It
feels
all the time.
A weird. Well, do they? That feels a weird thing to do because I had a carry-on case. What, I'm taking that into the toilet with me.
They can't stop you.
That feels odd.
Yeah, I know
think
what you mean.
I think they call the flight deck and say we think there's a bomber on board. He's gone to the toilet with a case. That's
bloody
weird.
Hell.
And his mate has weed himself. Which, by the way, that's an interesting point as well. Which is, of course, you're only allowed to take in 100 milliliters of liquid. Ezra once said to me, and I think he nicked it off the internet. Some of Ezra's early jokes, I think, which I thought were brilliant. I think he nicked off the internet. But he did once say to me as we were going through, what's it called?
Security.
As we were going through security,
yeah.
And we were saying, you can't have more than 100 milliliters. He said, I think I've got more than 100 milliliters in my bladder.
Right.
I thought was a very good joke.
Yeah.
But true as well is that you, when you were dying to go to the toilet, would have been definitely over the acceptable limit of liquids. How was it when you actually got to a toilet?
That's a really good question. I mean, it was, I think, pretty amazing. Yeah, I can't quite remember. I mean, so I went to that first one you get to that you never go to.
Yes,
I've never really been to it.
Yeah.
And it's like there when you get off the plane, or presumably for this reason.
Have you ever had a thing, not in this case because you were desperate to go,
where
you quite need to go
when
you're walking down the corridor to passport or whatever,
and you think,
I don't want to go to the toilet because I'm quite ahead of the queue here. If I go to the toilet, there's going to be 20 people ahead of me.
And
in
you
the
hit a huge queue.
Yeah. Have you ever thought, I won't go to the toilet, I'll wait till baggage to go
definitely,
to the toilet.
Definitely.
Okay.
No, I thought you were going to say, and then you get to the passport queue and it's like rammed.
That happened to me.
Yeah,
because it's not just your plane.
I don't know if I've told you about, which is that I was flying.
Can I just apologise for the flight base, but it's very flight centric.
Well, so I think it's.
There might be people listening to this.
It feels
thinking,
good.
Cost of living, mate. You two sorting about planes all the time.
But I see what you're getting. Also, Bowie was scared of flying, so that's why.
That's true. So that's
it feels
why
good
we're saying
now that he's passed away. Yeah. Many sad things about that.
Yeah.
But one of the good things about it, the only good thing, he doesn't have to put a plane, and we can talk about it openly without offending him or.
Where is
his
David
estate.
Bowie buried? Or
that's such
cremated.
A good question.
I think he was cremated.
I feel like it's New York.
But where? Like, where was there a service? Would it have been New York? Because
I'm pretty sure.
I mean, I thought about that because. You said he didn't like flying, which is true, although I think he got over it, actually, towards the end of his life.
Right.
But, you know, whether his body was brought back
I don't know.
For
I
any kind of Bromley burial. I don't think he
definitely didn't have any affection for any of that. I think he's New York.
Yeah.
But have I told you that I was flying back from Israel?
It's another flying story.
Yeah, Israel. Yeah. Have I told you this one?
No.
Flying back from Tel Aviv, and you have to sit down while you're in Israeli airspace, right? You can't get out of your seat.
Is that right?
For security, they don't let
people
into the
loos. I know there's higher security.
Yeah, so they don't let you use the loos
for,
I don't know, like an hour and a half or whatever it takes.
God,
to. Can it be that long?
So the work noise is just going mental.
So that takes a bit of a sort of pre-plan, you know, in your head. You're sort of exactly thinking like, okay, an hour and a half. So we're flying, and then after a certain amount of time, the pilot from the flight deck, as we've established, to make it sound like we're more knowledgeable, says in a really, I'm sure... slightly light-hearted way, far too light-hearted for the gravity of the situation, as you're about to find out. He says, look, we've got a bit of an issue. None of the toilets are working.
Oh, you have told me this.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you told me on
none of the toilets are working. And I think by this point, I think the flight from Israel is like 4.5 hours, something like that. So I seem to remember we had 3 hours to go.
Yeah.
So he says, you know, there's a bit of a problem. And he actually said, you know, in a sort of appalling thing to say, gentlemen, you might, you know, want to use the nearest bottle. You know, like a joke, like a joke.
Right.
And I remember thinking, along with everyone else, Christ.
Was he Israeli?
Can't remember.
Right.
Okay, I can't remember.
Israelis have got a sort of slightly, you know.
Right, it's possible.
Breezy, over breezy attitude to everything.
But I do remember everyone had done that thing where you've had a drink and you've had, you know. And all I can tell you is, I basically thought, I can't have this. Definitely. Now that I know we can't go, I've obviously got to go for a wee.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I remember basically barging into one of the loos, sort of basically breaking the lock.
Lock?
Like, they'd all been locked. Or maybe I used my thing
to sort of... Israeli airplane. You were getting shot by Mossad.
No, it was a British Airways flight.
Oh, it was British Airways.
Yeah,
okay.
And
it wasn't LL.
I used it.
I wouldn't do it on LL.
No,
I just
definitely
you?
Wouldn't do it on LL. But in answer to your question, what's the most relieving peeve
you've
ever had?
You did break in.
Yeah, what's the most... That
and did no one try and stop you?
No, because I did it...
And in what way? Because this is my point. This is what I was thinking when you said that. In what way can an airplane toilet not work?
So
like, all it cannot work.
I asked about that. Yeah.
Well, all it cannot work, I assume, flush. Is the flush because as a bucket, as a receptacle, it presumably works.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it didn't flush, and it was something to do with the water system. It was all anyway. Yeah. It was all sort of clogged or whatever.
Yeah.
And so it wouldn't have taken long for it to be Glastonbury.
God, it's been toilety. It's been plane centric, but it's also been very toilety.
Well,
had anyone else done that before you got in there?
Not as far as I know.
Because, okay, so here's the problem with what you did. Here's the antisocial thing with what you did. Mm. Is if I'd been on that flight, not knowing you, and I'd seen some bloke thinking, I'm just going to disobey that and go to the toilet, and I myself had probably been very conscious about my bladder because I'd have thought, now I'm doing that. And then other people thought, I'm doing that. The two old ladies who are not on that flight, but let's imagine they are, would definitely have thought. And then what do you have? You have a toilet overflowing with piss.
No, it's bad.
Yeah, maybe even shit. Sorry, ladies and gentlemen. Sorry to bring that up.
No, it was a pee, but it's bad. But it was the most relieved, you know, I felt really good. Right. So
let's move on.
Are you sure?
Yeah, right. Let's move on, because there is some Bowie news.
Yeah.
So I haven't actually read this.
Oh, yeah.
But someone in The Guardian has written a piece called From Ibiza to the Norfolk Broads, My 2,700-mile bike ride into Bowie's life on Mars. So what I assume it means is that this bloke, his name is James Briggs, actually rode on a bike, although clearly he must have got a boat for some of it. He bike rode from Ibiza to the Norfolk Broads.
Okay.
Now, I guess my point is, he flew to Ibiza, cycled 900 miles around the island, then onward through the Spanish and French countryside. I mean, none of this is about Bowie, really. Here he starts talking about it, about Rick Wakeman and Woody Woodman's ear and whatever. But there's just no way in the world that when Bowie, at a point in time when he was particularly writing kind of associative lyrics, it implied that there's any meaning, I think, to the journey from Ibiza to the Norfolk Broads.
No.
You know, I mean, actually, really, it just means in the song, everywhere, doesn't it? It's a sort of slightly surreal way.
From London
of
to
saying,
Timbuktu or something.
From Jack O'Groats.
Yeah.
From John O'Groats to Timbuktu.
You're obviously on very familiar terms with it. You call him Jack.
Yeah, but it's one of those phrases, isn't it? It's from here to there. You
know? Yeah, I think what I would think about that bike ride is, in Ibiza, you might think for a few minutes, oh, Bowie mentioned this in the song, but there's nothing there to actually grip onto. But let's just say it's got a Bowie association. Then presumably you're cycling for like 3 weeks where there's no Bowie anything.
Well, that's how he seems to have done this article, is that there's sort of like, he's just mentioning Bowie stuff. So Bowie had a makeup artist he referred to as My Picasso, a Frenchman named Pierre Laroche, who painted Bowie's Shock of Blue Eyeshadow in the Life of Mars video.
Yeah.
And then created the lightning. I mean, none of this is to do with anything, but then he suddenly says, prior to Danois, which is somewhere in France, I'd spotted a settlement high in the Adrèche Mountains called Saint-Pierre-Laroche. Could the mysteries of life on Mars be unravelled from on high? And obviously not.
No.
I mean, obviously not. I mean, you know, to be fair to this bloke, I think it's meant to be just a kind of random thing to do. He tries. He says, I pedal onward from Danois to the honky Chateau recording studio near Paris where Bowie recorded Low. It's not interesting.
Well, I'd like to see this.
Well, I'd like to see it, but it's not. It doesn't really fit, you see what I mean?
No.
Because it sounds to me like he, you know, Low, as we know, was recorded a long time after Life on Mars. I walked with the ghost of Chopin and a Bowie playing ping pong with Iggy Pop.
I mean, I would say,
oh, the original Steinbeck piano Bowie played on the album Remains. What piano is on Low? I can't think of a single moment.
Well,
of
it's like keyboard,
acoustic,
like synth.
Piano.
Oh, acoustic piano.
On Low.
Yeah. There's Be My Wife, barrel piano. I mean,
that's not a Steinbeck.
Well, I don't know what
that's,
I mean,
kind of a honky tonk piano.
Yeah, it's very honky tonk, sort of pub piano.
I mean, I suppose they could have put it through something to make it sound like that.
Yeah, I mean, there may be other bits of piano on there.
Yeah.
He's not a proper journalist, because the headline there is that I think he's missed is that he walked with the ghost of Chopin.
Yeah.
That's amazing. He just tosses that off in a sentence.
Yeah.
But that really is, no, there's no real.
I would say that's just nonsense.
Being in Ibiza is. Also, I think the Norfolk Broads and Ibiza have one characteristic, which is you never quite know when you're actually there. So you sort of, there's nothing to grip onto.
Norfolk Broads.
Yeah, like when are you in the Norfolk Broads?
I've never known that. And when are you in the Brecon Beacons?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good question.
So I don't think you'd ever have that moment when
you're on the South Downs. I mean, who knows?
Yeah, I don't know.
No one knows. So, look, I'm going to mention this, even though it might involve us sailing into choppy waters.
Okay.
Because we've had some trouble before mentioning some of David's sexual exploits, haven't we?
Oh, dear. We're going back there again.
Let's not talk about how we got into trouble.
No, we did.
But I think we would be okay to mention this because it is in the papers already, rather than as in the case of the previous one, we mentioned something and then it was in the papers.
Yes,
this is in the papers already.
Yeah, okay.
So I think it's okay to mention that Debbie Harry, the wonderful singer of Blondie, has recalled being flashed by David Bowie in 1977. And her main point is David's size was notorious, of course, and he loved to pull it out with both men and women. It was so adorable, funny and sexy. Now, the first thing to say is obviously Debbie is not perhaps in touch with modern thinking.
No, she's about indecent exposure
there. I mean, she slightly covers herself. She says, you have to consider the context. I was a consenting adult, shall we say. I believe that that is really the borderline.
Okay.
In her memoir, Harry says she assumed Bowie flashed her as a thank you. It's an interesting way of saying thank you.
I mean, it's a lot more effort than saying thank you.
Well, not for you and on that plane, apparently. On that aeroplane, you know, you get it out very quickly. I would never get my cock out and think about pissing on the floor, but there we go. It was very funny, apparently. I didn't touch it, but I did think, well, very nice. I was flattered. He's one of the great men that I admire in music.
God, that's
what I like about this is this whole sentence in The Independent. She says, I guess I was sort of flattered. He's one of the great men that I admire in the music world. Clearly a genius. Bowie died of cancer on the 8th of January 2016. The Independent adds, just in case.
Right.
So, yeah, there we go.
I've got a similar, I mean, it's a bit visual, and you might want to put it on your Twitter. So I'll read it to you, and then I'll show you the picture. There's an egg cup you can buy.
Right.
In loving memory of David Bowie, this is on the website, in loving memory of David Bowie, who left this world too soon, 11th of January 2016, this lovely white china egg cup is hand-painted with a little egg-shaped Bowie and Ziggy Stardust persona. It comes packaged as shown in a simple brown box type.
Is it just you going on about how terrible Bowie art is again? Is this what leading to?
I'll show you it. It's packaged in a little brown box type with vintage-style baker's twine with a swing tag. So it sounds lovely.
Yeah, what is it? Oh, yes. Okay, so you've done this again. You've done this a few times. What Tim likes to do is he likes to find terrible, terrible Bowie art or Bowie branded stuff, in this case an egg cup, and show it to me and laugh. And he doesn't understand that this is an audio podcast.
It's the most amazing.
I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, go and find it.
Look what it's called.
It's called, this is funny, Eggy Stardust.
Right, so it's got Eggy Stardust written on it. And then it's got a picture of not even a baby's version of what a baby looks like.
Yeah.
So a round pink head with, of course, the Aladdin Sane flash.
Yeah, it's got the Aladdin Sane flash and then underneath it another Aladdin Sane flash.
It's just hopeless.
Which, of course, is not Ziggy Stardust, it's Aladdin Sane. But under it...
Look it up, Eggy Stardust.
But to be fair to Eggy Stardust, that is a bit better... Then I can't remember what it was now. When I bought you the chopping board.
Oh, yeah, chopping board, yeah.
The chopping board.
Let's Chop or something?
Let's Chop. And it had a stew thing in it.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, put on your apron and cut the stews or something. something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is... And that is a terrible pun.
Yeah.
Whereas I would say Eggy Stardust is not a terrible
pun. Eggy Stardust, I think, is quite good. Yeah. But I like the gravitas of he died too soon and then basically a baby. Dressed as Ziggy Stardust on an egg cup.
Is that very funny? You died too soon at the age of 7 months. Eggacy, very good.
Yeah, you did hear that.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Space Eggacy. that doesn't work at all.
It really doesn't work.
That's okay. Well, is that all the Bowie news?
There's another. Sorry, we seem to have three things which are united by their Bowie who died earlier today type thing. Because I hadn't
realized, earlier today.
There is a picture of this, but it doesn't matter. It's a famous picture of him going around Berlin with a pig. Do you know that?
I've never seen that.
But there he is. He's sort of like 1930s style with a piglet.
I don't know if I have ever seen that.
It was Zowie's birthday, and I think they did some mad rock star version of what you do on your son's birthday when he's six, you know, a piglet.
Really?
And there's loads of... There's a whole internet thing on this. I mean, you might want to look at
it. Has anyone gone Piggy Stardust?
That's so interesting. I don't know if they have, but I tell you what.
I mean, that's pretty good as well. That's a pretty good pun.
Piggy Stardust is maybe even better because Eggy Stardust is.
Yeah, Piggy. It's one letter I've changed there.
No, Piggy Stardust is. I don't think I've ever heard Piggy Stardust. Seems to open up a whole world.
Let's do it. Let's get a pig. And, well, I'm afraid we'd have to give it the lightning bolt because no one. That's the thing, is right. Aladdin Sane.
Ziggy Stardust.
Aladdin Sane, Bowie himself, I believe, said it's just Ziggy goes to America. So, yeah. So when he's got the lightning bolt, right? Well, technically, is that a picture of Ziggy Stardust?
Yeah, I know, exactly.
Or is it a different character called Aladdin Sane?
It's a good question. I think he said it was Ziggy Stardust, as you say. He says Ziggy went to America.
Yeah.
So I think we should assume...
Are we assuming that when Ziggy went to America, he thought, I've got to change my name?
Possibly he changed his name because of drug use or something. Or, yeah. But just
it's a shame because, you know, the opportunity was there for Piggy Stardust and Aladdin Sane slightly fucked
someone must... Hang on. But David Bowie with the Pig and Whisper, there's a whole Reddit chain, but at the top of it, there's just this one which says, "Heart." I mean, it really brings you down to earth. Hard to believe both Bowie and the pig are gone now.
That is.
It is sobering, isn't it?
It is hard to believe. Yeah. That. I mean, it's also hard to believe that Bowie and the pig... the Bowie's gone, but the pig has possibly also been eaten.
Right,
I mean,
yeah.
That's unlikely about David. But
by the way, I don't want to...
The pig has almost definitely been...
I don't want to open up the whole existentialist, and I'm not even touching on your book about God, but it's a... My brain immediately says, and we don't have to answer this, but where are they?
Where are who?
Where is Bowie and the pig?
Well, we discussed where Bowie's ashes were just earlier.
Yeah, I know, but it's not the
same
thing.
And we suspect that they're in New York.
So what happens when you put Piggy Stardust?
Yeah, let's see where Piggy Stardust gets us.
I can't believe this is the...
Oh, hang on, Ted Lasso. So is that a joke in Ted Lasso? Is it a joke in Ted Lasso?
Possibly.
Who is Piggy Stardust is one of the questions that comes up.
Okay, let's
followed
see.
Followed by, is Piggy Stardust raffle legit? That's weird. Piggy Stardust is a Hogs for the Cause team created in 2010. The team is made up of 44 men and women ready to cook, party, and raise money for pediatric cancer. Is Piggy Stardust raffle, would you believe it, it's a public charity.
Okay, really?
Yeah, Piggy Stardust is a charity, is a registered charity. You have to be 21 years old to enter, and it's a raffle. And here, win the ultimate Piggy Stardust whiskey.
Okay.
And look, there is
Wow, there it is.
The Piggy Stardust is a pig with a lightning bolt, and it seems to be glasses. This is weird. You can win the 25-bottle Dream Collection Pappy Van Winkle Family Reserve.
And there are also, on Instagram, loads of pigs named after, called Piggy Stardust, and pictures of pigs. But, I mean, by the way, we should offer ourselves as patrons of that charity if it's possible, because I think it's a brilliant name.
They'd want us. Look, here it is again.
Piggy Stardust. Yeah,
Piggy Stardust NOLA. It's in New Orleans, Piggy Stardust. Yeah, there's someone called Piggy Stardust on Twitter, which rather confusingly, it's a picture of a hamster. So, or is that a guinea pig?
No.
What I quite like is that Piggy Stardust has retweeted someone called you park like a cunt. So there we are. It's possible that Piggy Stardust is a troll.
Well, I'm glad we stumbled across that.
I don't know if we covered his cock.
Oh, Debbie Harry, the flashing thing. Yeah, I think it is definitely an example of how it was very different then.
Yeah.
And I suppose if anything, I feel a bit let down by David, because that seems like a sort of rugby club thing to do. Flash your genitalia as a thank you or whatever the hell it was.
I know, I disagree with that.
No?
I mean, I think that a rugby club thing to do is you just basically get your cock out in the pub with lots of mates chanting. Whereas I think if you're David Bowie and you're getting it out for Debbie Harry, I'm totally with the idea that one shouldn't get one's genitalia out, although I get the impression that she was very much consenting of it.
Yeah.
But I think these people at the time it happened are so incredibly cool, and they are both very sexy, that I think it, from the way she describes it, it sounds like it was a sub-erotic moment.
Okay. Well, isn't she with Chris Stein?
She might have been. Chris, if you're listening, Chris Stein follows me. On Twitter.
And sends does
me,
he?
Yeah.
Amazing.
And sends me quite a lot of messages.
All right.
I'm always very excited by him. He doesn't
understandably
seem to have a sense that, no, mate, you were in Blondie at the absolute height.
Yeah.
You know, you've wrote Heart of Glass and Picture This and all these brilliant songs. So I'm very excited, but he just chats to me. So if you are listening, I'm sorry to bring up the moment that Bowie did that, but
maybe he's got a line on it. Maybe he's got a view on it.
Also, Bowie, isn't he one of those people where if you're with someone, and there's a hall pass thing that you think is never going to happen.
Okay.
Right? There's a hall, you don't think it's never going to happen, that he's like top of the list, i.e.
Right.
Okay, look, obviously we're married, but forgetting he's dead for the minute.
Right.
If you had the chance to sleep with David Bowie, obviously I'd understand.
Yes, I know that's supposed to be a thing.
I know someone who has slept with David Bowie before he was famous and whatever.
Okay.
Bloke I play football with.
Yes.
His wife in like the early 60s.
Okay.
You know, they went out together. They went out together, right. I think, for one. And what he always says to me, Macca, my friend Macca,
right,
is that his wife's mum made David a very nice breakfast.
Blimey.
Yeah. But they were both about 18 at the time. And, you know, in the morning, David, who is not famous, Davy Jones,
yeah,
has done the deed with the person who's about to come, Macca's wife. And he gets a lovely full English.
I can't imagine Bowie eating a full English.
Well, that was before he was Bowie. And I wonder if this, the young Davy Jones bloke, like everyone else in 1964 or whenever, that's what they ate.
I know what you mean. But from what little, you know, from those early interviews and things, I slightly imagine Bowie would be, I don't know, like, I don't eat sausages. I don't know. I feel like he would be more...
You so went for the Bowie impression there, didn't you?
Yeah.
You went...
I felt like sausages was a good one to do with him.
Yeah. You went for the Flight of the Conchords Bowie voice. Yeah. I don't eat sausages. You went totally like that. You see, I don't think he was Bowie. That's the whole point.
He wasn't Bowie like, then.
In 1973, yeah, there he is. We imagine that he's got the Biggie, yeah, Stardust. Right. He's got the...
That's why he wouldn't.
Unquestionably, Biggie Stardust would have said...
That's cannibalism.
He would have said, I don't eat sausages. that's definitely what would have happened. And is he still with us? I have no idea. In fact, that's what happened to him, because I do eat sausages. But yes, I think you're imagining the Bowie of 1973, the one that you saw, not drinking tea or not drinking tea in, yeah, Edinburgh. And he would have said, I don't eat sausages.
Yeah, he would have done.
But Davy Jones is just like a bloke, isn't he, in 1964. And he's saying, thank you very much, Mrs. Macca. Thank you. That's lovely.
I think.
Can I have some more brown sauce?
I think the spiders.
I want to carry on with it. What? Have you got a cup of tea? A little bit of brown bread. Well, yeah, white bread.
Is this David Jones?
This is David Jones. Okay. Yeah. I'm having breakfast. I didn't really want to stop it. I was enjoying it. Yeah.
Do you have any more toast?
Yeah.
Is that how he speaks in that slightly posh suburban?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I've got long hair. Yeah. It's what we like. I'm part of society. I don't have a handbag or nothing. I feel that's what he'd be doing.
Oh, no, no, no sugar. No sugar, thank you. My tea. No, I think it'd be slight. I think you'd get elements of the alien coming. Like certain things where I should go, no sugar? What do you mean, no sugar? So I just don't take sugar.
Do you think? Well, no, you've made him slightly more
effeminate.
Yeah,
he's a bit too effeminate.
Although in that interview, if anyone is listening and wondering what we're referring to, we have played it.
Which interview?
The interview where David is interviewed by Cliff Mitchellmore, I believe.
Oh, yeah, yeah, right.
For
right.
being a member of the Long Haired Society.
Yeah.
Is David says, in quite an effeminate voice, he says, well, you do sometimes get comments of people say, like, oh, can I hold your handbag, darling?
Yes.
And stuff like that.
Yeah.
What does he say about it? He says, but we just laugh at it.
I can't remember, yeah. No, doesn't he say that it's not very nice or something?
Oh, yeah, it's not very nice, yes.
Something like that.
Yeah. He's a bit upset by it. He doesn't at that point own his bisexuality. Because he says that's not very nice, yeah.
No, but so he's like, well, you know, I'll have some marmalade. Thank you. Just marmalade. Well, we've only got strawberry jam. Because I think
marmalade would be a bit outre.
Yeah. Oh, no, that's fine. I don't mind the jam. Yeah.
I mean, the fact that she gave him quite a nice breakfast always strikes me as a little bit odd, given that I imagine the early 60s as a time when, you know, if you turned up with a strange man.
Yes.
If you were a daughter in a household and a strange man turned up, you would get a boot on your ass outside and stay out. Don't come anywhere near my daughter again.
I'm
imagining this kind of like early 60s play for today household.
Yeah, yeah.
But this was clearly liberal enough for them to think, oh, he seems like a nice boy. Yeah, that's all right. I'll give him a lovely breakfast.
What do you think a lovely breakfast,
it's a full English
for you is a lovely
it's
breakfast?
Definitely full. Well, certainly in the early 60s, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to, as some of you may know, I've tried trying to wean myself off the full English. The Reverend Richard Coles, who some of you may know, has sort of taken up the torch of posting breakfast on social media. But what he always does, he did it this morning. Mm. He was on a train, looked very, very nice, a kind of pan, kind of like wrought iron pan with breakfast in it on a train. He said, as he always does, something like, you know, beat this at Padil. And he seems to not realise that I've stopped posting breakfast pics, and he's endlessly sending pictures of his breakfast, which are always full English.
Do you feel you have to say something at some point?
Well, I did. So I asked him. Actually, he did a very good joke in which he said, I said, where are you? I couldn't be bothered to... Well, I couldn't find it. I said something like, are you on the Flying Full English, which is a rubbish pun.
That's absolutely terrible.
But he said, no, I'm on the Chattanooga Choo Choo. And he spelled choo-choo, C-H-E-W-C-H-E-W.
Right.
That's good, isn't it?
It's all right, except it's got Chattanooga in it, and it's a bit sort of...
Well, it's a train.
No, I understand that.
Yeah, it's a train.
Yeah.
I think that's good.
Yeah, no, I'm not.
Don't do Richard Cole's pun down.
No, I get it. It's
hang on, I'll show you. Yeah, posh train breakfast. Look at this and drool.
Oh, wow, that is quite posh.
But it does look lovely. God, look at it. What is
can't
that?
Can't quite work out what it is.
Well, it's potato. I think that's black pudding mashed up.
Oh, I see.
An egg.
Yeah.
Oh, where's the sausage and bacon? I mean, it's really flash.
Yeah, it's very different. Yeah.
And there's pots of marmalade and brown sauce. It looks really lovely. And I said, is this the full Flying English you're on? And oh, no, it's better than that. I've done it down.
Okay.
I've done it down. Sorry, Richard, if you're listening. So, as you can see, that looks like there's corned beef hash or something on it. So he said, it's the Hashanuga choo-choo.
Okay, that is much better.
That's much better.
Yeah, that's good.
Much better.
Yeah.
This person says it's an Avanti breakfast.
Okay, that's not a pun. That's the Avanti train,
It's an amazing breakfast. Anyway, there we are. I've run out of David Bowie things now.
What I read is that there was an interview with Bowie in the late, 90s, 2000, about, because obviously they're re-releasing the Ziggy Stardust motion picture film. And there's an interview they've dragged up. And in it, they go through the whole thing, which we all know, which is a big surprise to everyone in the band. And, when he announced that he was retiring Ziggy. But what Bowie says is 48 hours after that, he's sitting at home or wherever thinking, God, did I really do that? I think I was just really tired of all the traveling and I now feel much better.
All right.
And almost implying that he had gone in too far because they'd all fallen out by then. But really, what he really meant was, thank you. This has been a wonderful tour. I'm going to have a bit of a rest.
Right.
And I'm sure we'll be back. By the way, when you see a band finish a tour, they don't say, we'll be back next year. They don't even say anything. You just say, thank you. Yeah. It's been amazing.
Yeah.
And they probably feel like, God, I couldn't do another night.
Yeah.
But he went a bit far.
Yes. So what happened?
Well, he didn't, as we know, what happened.
No, hang on, there's some news about this today. Do you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
It was something about loyalty.
Yes, exactly.
So hang on.
Yeah. I don't know if that was the same article. I did read that article.
Okay. No, it's gone. It's vanished. How can this... This is like a ghost thing.
Oh, that's weird.
This morning, I read an article about Bowie saying that what had upset... I hardly looked at it.
Yeah.
I just read the headline, which basically said that the reason it broke up the spiders was something to do with loyalty, to do with money, that they'd asked...
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
But I know this anyway. They'd wanted to rise.
That's the old story we know.
Yeah. But then why was it in the news?
I think entirely because of the release of the film.
Right.
I don't think, but the bit that I picked up on was him saying, I think I shouldn't have said it.
One thing about the breaking up of the spiders, which is a big deal, right, in the Bowie timeline, it shouldn't be, should it, really? Because, all it meant was that Bowie played with some different musicians.
Mm.
He went on to do loads of brilliant albums. We're absolutely not gone to the shit.
Yeah.
The period for many years to come.
Yeah.
And so it's not like Bowie broke up the spiders and, oh God, that was a massive deal in terms of his creative output. He did Land Insane. That was his next album. And then, Diamond Dogs and then Low. And, he's brilliant for ages.
Right.
He still uses some of those musicians, doesn't he? He doesn't never play. Am I right about that?
Not spiders.
None of them?
I don't think so, no.
Okay, maybe I'm wrong about that.
No. I mean, he did do pin-ups after it. He did use them after they split up.
Right, so they're in the studio doing pin-ups.
They did pin-ups after it, but that was all a bit grim and they sort of all felt they were...
Pin-ups is the shit album.
It's a bit shit. I think it's quite a good album, but everyone says it's shit. I don't think it's a bad album. It's just cover versions.
Yeah.
It's not...
The production on it is
it's not definitely terrible. Not amazing, but there's a couple of songs on there that... And Bowie's singing brilliantly.
Yes,
because he's in peak, he's still sort of Ziggy, basically.
Yeah, I've tried... So I've gone back
to... It's not great.
I've tried with pin-ups a few times.
Yeah, it's not great.
You have to try with it, which you shouldn't have to do with a Bowie album anyway. It's the sort of thing you say about, I've tried with Tonight. I've thought, I'll give it another go. People say to me, if you listen to it, or this new mix of it, and it's always rubbish. It's always unfailingly rubbish.
Yeah.
Whereas pin-ups, you think, it should be better. Because, it's cover versions, but it's cover versions of mainly very good songs, CMD Play or whatever.
That's right, that's pretty,
You know, and then it's Bowie at the absolute height. So
sounding amazing, and
so
Ronson's
feel
good,
it should be better.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
But I mean, with all of the great albums, even though I'm utterly bored of them, I still, when I'm, meandering through Spotify, thinking, what should I listen to?
Yeah.
Endlessly trying new music that people have told me is good, and it never is.
Yeah,
I end up thinking, I'll put Ziggy Stardust on, and it's still brilliant, even though I'm bored of it. It's a weird feeling.
I completely agree.
It's a weird
feeling.
You can compare it, I think, to making love to your wife, not your wife, to one's wife. You can, because I think that, you know, you may be very much in love with your wife, but you've probably had sex with her a lot. And so there's an element of boredom, even though you really want to have sex with her still, but there's an element of boredom to it too, right? So, and so that's similar with listening to Ziggy Stardust, I think. You think, this is brilliant. I've sort of heard it a lot.
I feel, whatever. Yeah. I feel like that's in the early days of pop journalism when they're working out who should review these records.
Yeah.
And they got some guy who says, one can in a way compare it to making love to one's wife. Thinking, I don't think that's the right tone.
I'm not talking about reviewing the album. I'm talking about specific experience that Spotify has given you.
Yeah.
I mean, I suppose we might have had it with vinyl if we'd listened to it a lot, but it's nothing like Spotify. You end up listening to things that you really, really, really like too much.
But here's the punchline. But Ziggy Stardust lasts 45 minutes.
Very good.
I was quite pleased with
Very
that.
Very good.
No, but I know exactly what you mean. I find with Ziggy Stardust, definitely, and if you, that it's almost like I don't want to listen to it, but I tell myself, yeah, but as soon as you put it on, you'll be happy it's on.
Yes.
But it's quite hard to sort of think, I need to listen to it because you're so familiar with it.
Yes.
But when it's on, if it was on now, you'd think, oh, this is lovely.
Yes. You know?
And it's that, isn't it?
Yes.
It's not no great spirit of adventure.
No.
I tell you what's more of a conundrum than Bowie, more mystery shrouding them.
Yeah.
And Bowie is Mr. Nash, my fourth year geography teacher.
Yes. I'm glad you brought him up.
For two reasons. Which both came into my head, and I hadn't thought about them for a long time. What you should know about Mr. Nash, he had a beard, and he was like a real teacher. He didn't have corduroy on his, I don't think, but he was like that proper teacher. Really quite quiet, didn't say very much, but two profound things happened.
Right.
One is, we were in the, you know, the huts out by A Block that are sort of built at my school. Yeah, they were like the temporary huts that anyone that went to a comprehensive school in the 80s, I don't, maybe true now, 80s and 90s knows there were the temporary structures that were built that became, that were there forever.
Right.
Because they always said like, we're going to have these for a period.
We're going to build a music.
Yeah, but we're going to have a whole block. Yeah. Never happened, not when we were there. So we're in these huts and it's the beginning of...
So you would go to the huts?
To have lessons.
Oh, to have lessons.
Yeah.
Not to sort of... smoke or...
No, they were like temporary classrooms that lasted the entirety of my school time.
Right, okay.
And...
you just didn't drink that coffee.
Well, you were getting so worried about me spilling it. And, like, I just...
that was a reason to drink
it. Yeah. So, and I was worried about needing a wee, so it was work for both of us. Yeah. I've not touched it. And I've not, So, we were in the block and they had very rudimentary sort of, like, heating system with sort of wires behind it in one corner of the room. And this was September, so it's hot or you know whatever, and almost the first thing he said in the room when we got there, quite quietly, oh shit,
damn, that's a call from America.
Oh, do you want to take it?
Okay, thanks, bye bye.
Wow.
So that was an interesting moment. So I was in New York recently at the St. Regis Hotel.
Yep.
And I was doing stuff about my book, Jews Don't Count, and I didn't actually have a copy of it, or the American copy of it. I didn't have one. And so the publisher sent a box of books, too many. They just did it. A box of books, like 20 copies, around to the hotel. So I thought, oh, God. So I took about six of them home, because it might as well, but I didn't want to take them all home. And then I said to my younger brother, who lives in New York, who had been asking, saying, I've got friends who'd like to read it. Can you give me free copies? I said, yeah, come and pick these up. You can have as many as you like.
Right.
Blah, blah, blah. Being my younger brother, it's clear now he just hasn't done that.
Okay.
Because that was the hotel. And initially I was a bit terrified because I'd forgotten that until I worked out what it was. So that's the hotel I've stayed about a month ago. It's got my number calling me saying, hello, Mr. Badil, this is the St. Regis Hotel.
When are you checking out?
That would have been brilliant. No, saying a package has arrived for you, a package is here for you. And we're going to, you know, what is it? And we're going to dispose of it and blah, blah, blah. And I thought, shit, someone sent me a bomb was my first thought.
Oh, wow.
My first neurotic thought. Yeah. Someone's trying to kill me.
Yeah.
They knew I was staying there and a mysterious packet. But then I realized, it's the box of books that my twat of a younger brother has failed to pick up.
Okay.
Because that's what he's like.
Yeah. Okay. So we're okay. Yeah. Now that is a moment.
Mr. Badil.
It is like when I'm sure everyone said this, I got a call, this is years ago, when, and they said, it was my bank, and said, is that mistake? And I said, and they said, have you, this is like January, said at Christmas, on Christmas Eve, did you go to Liverpool?
Right.
And stop at some service stations along the way. And then just before that, we were at the Met Bar, which is the, as you know, was the sort of famous London
in the 90s.
Britpop 90s. Yeah, so this was quite a while ago. Met Bar, and they kept reeling it off, saying buying champagne, like, I don't know, 20 bottles of champagne or something. And it was a similar out-of-body thing, thinking, as it was developing, I was thinking, the first thing I thought was, did I? I mean, I'm definitely not. I mean, that is to say, I would definitely remember that. My life is not. But I remember thinking, it might be that I did, because it seems weirder that I didn't.
Right.
And they got my card. And of course, then you come into back to earth and think, no, someone's nicked my card. Like, obviously,
well, actually, the other day, sorry, we've got to come back to Mr.
Yeah,
Nash.
We'll come back to Mr. Nash.
A very strange thing happened the other day, which was a man on Instagram, who I don't know, posted on his stories a very weird looking kind of sepia image of my driving license.
Oh.
And it had, like, you know, the way that people on Instagram stories do sort of jolly writing.
Yeah.
Well, it had the real Badil's driving license! ! So I just wrote to him and said, how have you got this? Right. And it was my old driving license.
Right.
And I said, my wallet disappeared about 6 months ago. And he said, yeah, my mate is a canal fisher.
Wow.
And he does it with magnets, and your whole wallet came out of the canal.
Amazing.
Yeah, but then he's clearly, this bloke didn't think, I won't post David Badil's driving license on the internet. It's got like an address on it and shit like that. So he's deleted it now. I told him, I said, great, but can you delete it? I did say, any chance of the wallet back? And he said he got in touch with the bloke, and the bloke said, no, it's all chopped up from a boat propeller.
No way.
Yeah.
Not the driving license, though.
The driving license, well, the driving license looked in a state. It looked like it had been, you know, it looked like it had aged 100 years from when I lost it, because it'd been underwater, right? But, I mean, the guy, like he said, the canal fisher had tried to get in touch with me. I have to take that as read, because I don't know. But anyway, what has not happened is no money has been returned to me.
I'm almost certain that is like dog ate my homework. Like, if you're a canal fisher, the thing you always say is a boat propeller.
Yeah.
You always say that.
Yeah.
Like,
I'd love to help, but hardly anything left of it, mate. Boat propeller.
And I think, I don't know much about canals and boats, but firstly, the boat propellers are tiny compared to the width of the canal. What are the chances?
Yeah.
And also, they're just above the surface. They don't, like, how
it's quite an odd idea to imagine my wallet bobbing about. Well, that's how you imagine it. If it's on the canal and it's near a propeller, one imagines a bit of jostling and then it floats off. You don't imagine it gets completely
and also destroyed. It's going to, the boat's going to be going towards the wallet if it's floating, and then it's going to, the wake of it is going to make it. But, how is it going to get to the propeller?
But to be fair to the canal fisher, I don't think the canal fisher stole the money. Because I am, by the way, I don't even think I was pickpocketed. I think I fell out my pocket when I was on my bike. I remember getting back, I bought some fish and chips.
Yeah.
So I had it in the fish and chip shop. When I got home, ate the fish and chips. Where's my wallet? It had gone. So I think it just fell out. And I think therefore it was in the canal.
Yeah,
Sherlock. Someone took all the money and all the cards and then threw it into the canal.
You don't think, is it possible that he put it in the canal bank?
I think we should move on back to, or go back to Mr. Nash. That's I think the best bet.
Mr. Nash said in September, come Christmas, we're all going to be huddled around that heater.
Okay.
And he pointed off to the corner. And
that was a profound thing.
Everybody in the class, or let me put it, nobody in the club registered that or thought about it. And my friend Piers, he's back.
Piers Hurdu.
Said something, or we both agreed, like, that is very prophetic. That is going to happen. And he spotted it. And nobody and by Christmas.
Sorry, is this meant to be like a really profound thing that Mr. Nash said?
By Christmas, we were all, as he predicted, quietly huddled around that heater.
I'm sorry, Tim. I'm sorry to rob you of a, you know, clearly quite rosy and important childhood memory.
Mm.
That is not a very prophetic prophecy. What he means is, it'll be colder at Christmas. Mm.
But he pictured the centre of gravity of the class changing and everybody wanting to be over that end of the hut. And he was 100%
cold.
Right.
Yeah, okay. What's the second very extraordinary thing? And really, you've got a lot of ground to make up
the
here.
Second,
that Mr. Nash said.
If anything, is harder to imagine as I think about it.
Yeah.
But basically, very quiet, Mr. Nash.
Yeah.
Like, you've got no way of really knowing
You know why he's quiet? Because he didn't have much to say, it turns out.
Very quiet and very understated.
Yeah.
We went to school assembly. Maybe it was end of term. I don't know, whatever it was. And there was a rumour that Mr. Nash was going to play his guitar.
Okay.
Which you don't even know where to begin because, like, he's got a guitar. He's going to play it. I can't even. And he played, in my memory, the most perfect version of The Boxer by Sam Raimi. Yes, he was singing. He was playing it like the proper finger picking.
Yeah, right.
And it was a genuinely astonishing moment.
Right.
When this quiet guy, for whatever reason, decided he wanted to play The Boxer in front of his school.
Did it get applause or boos?
I think we were... Do you know what the shame of this is? And Mr. Nash, if you're out there, it was genuinely moving. I think we probably got giggles. I think we probably were told to quieten down a bit. I don't know. I bet we handled it badly.
You might have had giggles because for a start, it goes, lie, la, lie. It's slightly funny. Yeah. And also, I come on from the whores.
No, I was just thinking.
You know, I do declare there were times when I took some comfort there. So Mr. Nash... Yeah. Would have done that bit about having sex with prostitutes.
Yeah, he would have taken some comfort. It does, when you think about it, I wonder if it was
entirely appropriate.
There's another way of thinking about this.
Yeah, also, it's quite long, The Boxer. Yeah, it's, it's like seven verses.
Yeah, he really could. I remember him committing
to it. So hang on, but, I mean, this is a better story than the one about huddling
it's
around.
It's really unusual.
Because huddling around the... I'm sorry to take this away from you, Tim. It's not a moment you shouldn't even remember it.
But I think we remembered it because no one would really say that. And if you pointed out to someone, if you said to someone, oh, I bet by December we'll all be huddled around, they go, yeah, yeah, and then move on. Whereas Nash knew that there was something was going to change in the way that classroom was organised.
I'm sorry, I'm not going with it. He's not Nostradamus here. It's not, oh, isn't it amazing? It's nothing. It's like literally nothing. It's like literally saying, yeah we're all up this end of the classroom, but it'll be colder in December, so we'll probably be that.
I tell you what, he's not Nostradamus because he was right. And it came to pass, but, unequivocally.
But I am prepared to accept that Mr. Nash suddenly saying, I need to do my version of The Boxer, is a bit of a moment.
Yeah.
Did the headmaster say, now boys, it was just boys.
No, it was boys and girls.
All right, now boys and girls.
Yeah.
You can't say that. That sounded like Jimmy Savile. That's the unfortunate thing. Now, boys and girls, especially in the 70s.
Yeah.
Or was it the 80s?
80s. It was early 80s. 80s. Yeah, early 80s.
Mr. Nash has got a little treat for you, a little surprise for you. He's going to be singing a Simon and Garfunkel song. Yeah. Please give a big round of applause. Is that how it was?
Yeah, it would have been like that. And it would be, and he said, you know, everything in this song has happened to Mr. Nash. that's what he seemed to think he probably said.
Did Mr. Nash ever explain? Did he ever say, I've always been a big fan of Paul Simon and Art Garfunkel?
It's weird. All I remember him saying is, speaking to Marfers and him saying to everyone, look, just to underline, I did at times seek some comfort there.
One of the things about Simon and Garfunkel, we might have discussed this, is I think it's always funny, is that when you see them interviewed now, there's a sort of discrepancy in the way they talk about Simon and Garfunkel.
Right.
So Art Garfunkel tends to say, you know, I sung the harmony here and Paul brought in this part here and we talked about it for a long time and it's all that kind of stuff. And Paul just says, I did everything. I wrote everything. Right. I worked out all the parts.
Right.
Yeah, Artie sung a bit here, but I told him exactly how to sing it. I did the whole thing.
Yeah.
He's very clear about that.
Is it? Do you think it's true? I think it probably is that for Art, has he had the worst high-profile baldness ever? Because it seemed like the way it went was really bad. Now,
well, I think that's an interesting thing, because I think that's just the way that attitudes have changed. Because here's the thing about Art Garfunkel, who has a funny name, a funny face, and a very, very funny forehead.
Yeah.
But here's the thing about him, is in the late 70s, he's a bit of a sex symbol.
Really?
He's, I think, the sexy one in Simon and Garfunkel.
Right, yes.
Which is maybe fair
enough.
That's true. But also, he's a film star. That's the thing.
Remind me?
Oh, God. He's in a number of films.
Did he do
most notably,
anything or something?
No, most notably, he's in a Nicholas Rogue film, which is one of my favourite films, called Bad Timing.
Okay.
It's absolutely brilliant. He's in Carnal Knowledge, which is a big film.
Yes,
Oscars, I believe.
Yes.
He's a successful, one of very few, not made fun of, not like David Bowie.
Right.
Made fun of rock star who becomes an actor. Actually, I don't know why he's not made fun of, because he's, in my memory, quite bad in them and looked just like Art Garfunkel, i.e. ridiculous. I mean, the best thing he's ever been in by a million miles, which you may know, is the Flight of the Conchords episode.
Right.
About, do you know about this?
No.
Well, I'm just going to tell you now,
right.
and any laughs here are just theirs, but it is very funny. Jermaine starts going out with this woman. What happens is they aren't doing very well, as in every episode. So they start doing a Simon and Garfunkel tribute act instead of their own act. And he's Garfunkel. And a woman sort of falls in love with him. But she then admits that what she really likes is Art Garfunkel. Right. And she's done this to various Art Garfunkel lookalikes. She calls it Garfunkling. Right? and various of them turn up
right.
at their house and get annoyed because it's meant to be, you know, my girlfriend, this is my girlfriend. They all look like Art Garfunkel. Anyway, the last one who turns up is Art Garfunkel. Right?
That's fun.
It's fucking hilarious.
Yeah, yeah.
And I would say that's the best he's ever okay. been.
Amazing. No, I'd forgotten about the film thing. He did seem to have a form of baldness where the baldness.
And you speak as someone who is bald.
Yeah, yeah. No, I speak. So I know what. But it feels like.
Have you ever thought about, like, well, I'll grow it really high and curly?
My son asked me the other day if I just literally didn't cut it, what would it be like in a year's time?
Yeah. Would it be like Art Garfunkel?
No, I think it would be more like the guy from Slade. Dave Hill.
Dave Hill. Oh, no, you're right. He had.
He's quite thin and went just straight down.
And straight down. I think that'd be cool if you look like him.
Imagining that. But Art Garfunkel seemed to have baldness on not of his head.
Like, yes.
His head was bald.
Yes.
Taken as granted. Then he seemed to have bald yes. hair
yeah.
above it.
Yes. I mean, that's like, there are people.
And I don't really understand.
There are people
going
I
on.
Know. I'm not thinking of you
right.
when I say this.
Right.
So don't take this the wrong way. Who's have a nose and then they seem to have an extra nose. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you think, like, that's yeah. not just one nose.
Yeah,
that's,
yeah.
That appears to be two
right.
noses.
Yeah.
And you're right. Art Garfunkel is like he's that not, with four heads.
But I don't even know if it's four. Maybe it is. But it's like, we all know he's bald, but if you were told to point to the baldness, you wouldn't be able to find it. Because it's not...
That's true.
I don't know where
the... I'll tell you the question you should ask, which is kind of a question like, how did we get here? What is the meaning of life? Is where does Art Garfunkel's sort of brow start?
Yeah.
I think that's the question you have to ask. It's very difficult.
Exactly.
Like, if you were... Look, he definitely doesn't have head lice. Don't get this. If you're listening, Art or Art's lawyers, he doesn't have head lice. But if he did have head lice,
yeah.
right, and a head louse, I mean, or an ant, if you like, but some kind of small insect-like thing came out of his hair and then thought, well, you know, I'm going to explore
yeah.
beyond the hair.
Yeah.
I think it'd be dead before it got to, like, the next bit of hair, which would be the eyebrows.
Right. But I think on top of that, or maybe it's related... It's like, you know, the what's that thing, the staircase that keeps going round and you can't see where it starts?
M.C. Escher.
Right. He's got M.C. Escher baldness in the sense
right.
that
the baldness
it's partly about the forehead being eternal.
Yeah.
But it's also, I can see he's bald, but if I had to put my finger on the baldness, yeah. I don't know where I'd put it because yeah. it's nowhere.
Yes.
And no. yet.
And everywhere.
It's everywhere.
Yeah, it's like a quantum baldness.
Yeah, exactly.
It's Schrodinger's baldness. But also, it would be a very, very interesting thing to have him in Benny Hill. Right. I think that would be amazing.
Yeah,
if, like, instead of yeah. the slaphead bloke...
Yeah.
I mean, it would have been a great joke in Benny yeah. Hill if instead of that bloke who slapped on the head just once
yeah.
for no reason, Art Garfunkel yeah. was there and Benny played him like a pair of bongos.
Yeah. That really is a missed opportunity.
Anyway, we've had a fabulous time, ladies and gentlemen. That's Talking Time for the Moon Boys. We'll see you next time.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.